Welcome to Scatterbrain Podcast, episode 142.
142, episode 142, man.
With Andrew again. Sweet.
We took a couple weeks off for the holidays. It's great to be back for season four, man. Can you believe it's season four?
Season four, wow.
Yeah. I'd like to thank Spidey and Bob for filling in last week for us. So, yeah, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks,
Spidey. Anyway, yeah, Bob. Season four. Can you believe that shit? It's amazing.
I know. Coming up on, what is it, like 3 full years of calendar years or something, and starting on the fourth one.
Yeah, coming up on 3 full years. Wow.
That's crazy.
I'm just surprised I'm still alive. That's cool.
Me too, actually. Yeah, so in that time, we've had some great conversations, discovered some killer music. We've met some awesome people in the process. And in a way, it's kind of fitting today because we're starting off the new season with a guest almost a year to the day, actually. We'd like to welcome back Andrew from Metal Assault Records to the podcast. Thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, good to be back. And yeah, you're right. It was almost exactly a year ago that I was last on your podcast. And
that was a fucking year ago already.
Whoa. Yeah, it's crazy. Time flies, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's good to be back. Thanks for the invite. You know, I'm glad to be the first one after the holiday break, I guess. You know.
Yep.
Thanks for taking some time.
Yeah.
So before we get too far into it, Andrew, can you tell everyone a little bit about Metal Assault in case they didn't hear the previous episodes and where they can find you?
Yeah, of course. So I run a company called Metal Assault, which is many things all at once. It's a record label. It's artist management, concert promotion and booking, and also a blog, which it has been for a long time as well. So yeah, it's metalassault.com, and we are on all socials at Metal Assault on Instagram, at Metal Assault LA on Facebook and Twitter. So yeah, that's and of course the record label has its own web store and everything, which is easily visible on any of these platforms. So yeah,
cool.
That's the gist of it.
So I'm like super jealous about the whole going around with the Death Angel thing. I got to hear about this.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you asked. Actually, to clarify that, Death Angel originally asked me to go on tour with them only as a fill-in for 1 week. So I was only going to be on that first leg of the Bass Strikes Back tour for the first week. And as it turned out, Exodus, who was also on that tour along with Testament, so that was a lineup, Testament, Exodus, Death Angel. Exodus needed somebody to do their merch after the first week. So they had somebody filling in for the first week, but nobody after that. So as it turned out, I just ended up jumping over to the Exodus bus, like from the Death Angel bus. So I did merch for Death Angel for a week, and then the rest of that tour, I worked for Exodus. And that was quite a long tour. It was about, I think, almost 8 weeks. We went all around the country. And then Exodus, they liked my work, so they had me back for the second leg of that tour, which was September, October. And I'm about to go out with them again in less than, it depends on when this comes out. Well, I guess I should just say in a few days, because they're about to go out on tour with Anthrax and Black Label Society. So, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah. My year turned out a lot different than what I had imagined, you know, for sure. Like 2022 was a whirlwind for sure.
Yeah, you spent a lot of time on the road because you did that tour. You said the second leg, and then you did something with, was it the Hatebreed tour as well?
Yeah. So the person who was tour managing the second leg of the Exodus tour, it turned out that his main gig, so to speak, is Hatebreed, is tour managing Hatebreed. So 3 days into the second leg of this Exodus tour, he asks me, hey, what are you doing after this tour? I'm like, well, nothing as of right now. Why do you ask? He goes, well, Hatebreed might be needing a merch guy, so if you're available. And he didn't even complete his sentence. I said, yes, I'm available, you know. So yeah, between the second leg of the Exodus tour and then the start of the Hatebreed tour, it was only about a week, I think. So yeah, those two tours are basically like back to back, and I finally got back and right before Thanksgiving. Last show was actually in San Diego for Hatebreed. That was the last show of the tour. And then I've been home since then. But I think it's about time right now where I'm getting that itch to go out again, you know. So, yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, of course. Other than that, I also toured with Old Blood. Like before the whole Death Angel Exodus thing happened, I did a tour with Old Blood, which is a band on the label as well. So, yeah, I was out on tour for about a little over 6 months of the year, I think. So that's definitely a good amount for me.
That's a lot of traveling, man. What was a typical day like there? I mean, I imagine it was constantly on the move, but what was a typical day like working something like that?
Well, that's definitely a good question, because I think a lot of people probably don't think about this side of working tours. They think it's all glamour and fun and, you know, all that stuff. But I mean, it is that too, but it's a lot of work and a lot of long working days. So basically, like a typical day for me working for either Exodus or Hatebreed, I mean, they're kind of similar in stature, like, I think. So we would load in around like 10 a.m. or 11 a.m. into the venue, which is like a huge difference from the tours that I did in the past where it was much later than that. But for these bands, yeah, the load in happens like very early, like in the morning. And then I have to set up the merch display, which takes, it could take up to a couple of hours, you know, depending on like the space I'm given to work with. And then I have to count all the merch that came in and see how much I need, how much more I need. So I have to go back to the trailer to get more merch to make sure I'm restocked for the show, because these shows get crazy. Like as soon as the doors open, it's like a nonstop line of people wanting to buy stuff, you know? And that line doesn't stop until the end of the show sometimes. So there's no time to like go out and restock during the show. Plus I don't want to leave the booth unattended while I'm doing that, like if I have to do it. So I'd rather do it beforehand. So I do all my work when it comes to all that stuff, like during the day.
Did you get to ride on the bus too, or did you have to drive?
No, I mean, I ride with the guys. Yeah, for sure.
Ah,
yeah. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise I would probably not do it. You know, it'd be too difficult. So.
Yeah. How long until you weren't fanboying? So you weren't like fanboying out over being on the bus with Exodus, for example.
I really had to like hold back, you know, like I had to mentally like prepare myself to not do that, because man, like they're legends, you know. It's like I had never even imagined in my life that I'll be working for them, you know. So I think I was good with that. Like I didn't fanboy out at all, you know. So I did good on that part. But yeah, going back to like the daily schedule, so yeah, like I would restock and be done with that, and then I would barely get like less than an hour to get some food or something before the show. Like as you know from the last time we met, like at the House of Blues in San Diego, that was my only window to get my pre-show meal, because after that, like we have the VIP meet and greet, which happens pretty early, like before doors, you know, a couple hours before doors. So I have to be involved in that too, because there's merchandise that needs to be given out to the VIPs and all that stuff. And plus they get early access to buy stuff at the merch booth as well. So, you know, that takes me all the way up to doors. And then from there, it's nonstop anyway, you know. So, yeah, my day like starts at 10 a.m. or even earlier sometimes. And then it's probably like 1 a.m. the following date by the time it ends, you know. So, yeah, it's a good solid 12 to 14 hour day, man. You know?
That sounds rough.
Yeah.
But probably pretty cool too. A lot of enthusiastic people there. And metal, and just getting to hear that music and be a part of that's pretty cool.
Did you get your own bed, or you have to sleep on the floor of the bus?
No, I get my own bed. Yeah, for
that's
sure.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, on the bus, it's like we're all equals. Like, there's no distinction. I mean, yes, of course, like they get priority over what bunks they want. They, as in the band members, and then the crew gets the scraps in that sense. But other than that, we're all equal, you know. There's no distinction there between band member and crew member, which is awesome, you know.
That's pretty cool. Yeah,
it's like when you go behind the scenes, you really kind of realize that these guys are all normal people, you know, like the guys in the band, even no matter how big they might be, like Gary Hole, man, he's like, he's a heavy metal celebrity. Like, you know, he himself like brings so many people out these days that come to the shows, especially after the Slayer thing, you know, but he's just like any other person, you know, so it's awesome.
He seems like he's funny as hell. He's probably a crack up, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. Big time.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he speaks his mind for sure. Like some of the stuff, like I can't really say, you know, like it's like all top secret, but yeah, he keeps it real, you know.
Let me ask you this. So you mentioned that the line for the merch is can be pretty long and pretty busy. I would presume, you know, that you don't have an unlimited supply of the particular shirt that's the hot seller on any given tour. Do you guys have like drops, like, you know, partway through that you're probably going to be at a large of whatever shirt and they have you picking up a shipment
partway along the way? Yeah, actually, I've been already kind of working, even though the tour hasn't even started, because like the band, Gary put me in touch with like the printing company, you know, the company that prints all the t-shirts and other merch. So like, like we have to come up with the numbers as to like what needs to be printed before the first batch, which we will see at the first show of the tour. You know, so that is based on sales from previous tours. So like, for example, for this upcoming tour, like we based the numbers off of the Bass Strikes Back tour across the two legs, you know? So yeah, we have to decide for the first batch, which is very important. And then I have to keep in touch with the printing company person to, you know, tell them how the sales are going. And we have to plan it out at least a week in advance, to the point where we might be running out of stuff, you know. We don't like, so here's the thing. I mean, there's basically like a two scenarios that could like happen when you're selling merch on tour. You could either run out of merch or you could be left over with a bunch of merch at the end. I mean, I think running out during a tour is way worse, because you're losing that opportunity to make money, you know. Like that's where the money is for these bands, like in merch, you know, that's where they make profit, you know? So, yeah. It's a very big part of the operation for sure. You know, but yeah, we do get drops, at least a couple of times during a tour, because like with the amount of sales that these bands generate, it's like, it's impossible to really carry so much merch at the beginning of the tour, you know? So.
I could see that. What are like the hot sellers? I know that some, probably the odd shirt that might be white instead of black probably doesn't sell as well. You know, they got like the four-sided long sleeves and stuff. What's like the hot seller that tends to be the case? Like, are you going to have trouble finding a hoodie? Are you going to have trouble finding the tour list with the dates on the back in large and medium, or what's the...
Yeah, that's a good question for sure. Well, from the tours that I did last year with Exodus and Hatebreed, the tour shirt is always a hot seller. But I've sold like so much, like all kinds of merch, you know, like for Exodus. And actually I can show you this on video, since, you know, it's right here. I sold these Paul Bailoff action figures on the
I saw those
last year. That is like I had to keep one for myself, you know.
That's awesome.
So we've sold all kinds of stuff. Like I've sold like the typical stuff which you have, like shirts, hoodies, long sleeves, and patches, hats. But then
you need your own action figure now with the desk in front of you and everything.
Yeah, I guess, you know, maybe someday, you know. But yeah, like there's so much different stuff. Like I've sold hot sauce for Exodus and for Hatebreed. It seems like everybody has hot sauces now, like, you know, but
that's weird.
Yeah, I know. Right. But it sells, man. Like, I mean, people want it, I guess. Like, I don't know. Like,
Exodus spicy mayonnaise. Oh, cool. Okay. Weird. Okay.
Yeah.
Do they actually make it themselves, or they just have?
No, actually, I think there's only one guy who makes it for everybody. He's based out of Northern California. His company is called Hella Hot Sauce. yeah, I mean, if whoever is listening, like, you can look it up, and it like the website has all the, it lists all the hot sauces that he's made. He's done Exodus, Hatebreed, he's done Skeletal Remains, all kinds of stuff. Like I don't remember the other ones off the top of my head, but a bunch of different stuff, you know. So yeah, but in terms of like, to answer your question, like in terms of the hottest item, yeah, the tour shirt is always the hottest item. But if a band happens to have an event shirt, you know, like for that specific show or maybe that state or something, like, you know, right now I'm wearing an Iron Maiden California event shirt. So the event shirt, I think that becomes hotter than the tour shirt, like if there is one, you know. Hatebreed did event shirts for every event on the tour that I did with them. So that was pretty crazy because basically it'll just be very limited, like one box. It'll be like about 50 or 60 shirts, you know, and they made it to where every event shirt was kind of based on something connected to that city or that state, you know, or that city to be specific, because they did it for every city, you know. Like for the San Diego, they did like a knockoff of the Padres logo. So that sold so quickly, you know, it was gone. So the event shirts were awesome because I just brought in the box and it would just sell out and I wouldn't have to worry about inventory or anything, you know, it would just go. So I think event shirts are always cool. That's why Iron Maiden still does them. And, you know, Exodus did a couple like last on the first leg. You know, they had those, like, it said Slay Team California, and there was a couple of different ones also, Slay Team Texas, Slay Team New York. So those did pretty well too. Yeah, tour shirt is always a classic, you know. It's like, you gotta have it. Like, if that's your souvenir. Like, I still wear tour shirts that I got, that I bought in 2011 and stuff, you know, like, they still fit, thankfully. So, yeah.
Those are great to have because you can look back at them and recall them. I still have some old Slayer shirts, you know, and other tour shirts from 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And I don't wear them all the time. That's why some of them still are held together, you know, because the ones that I did wear no longer exist. But I like to have those and look back on them, you know.
It's definitely I think the best possible souvenir, because I mean, you might remember the year or the lineup, but there's no way you would remember every date and venue where you saw any particular band, you know. So like a t-shirt with the tour dates would remind you, you know, okay, you were there, you know. So yeah, that's definitely something that always sells really well, and it's a pain in the ass to keep it in stock, you know, like a lot of times. So yeah, like from the band's point of view, like we have to make sure that it's like it doesn't run out. In terms of sizes, it really depends. I mean, you would think that like medium, large, XL, like those three should be the most popular sizes, but a lot of times it doesn't work out. The first leg of the Exodus tour, we kept running out of 2 and 3 X's like all the time, you know. So yeah, that was challenging.
How has doing all this affected the company?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely had to restructure and, you know, like scale back a little bit on the label side of things for sure, because there's no way I could keep that many, like that big of a roster while I'm out on the road. I mean, I do have an assistant who I hired mid last year, and in the beginning it was just like as a helping hand, but I think I'm giving her like more and more responsibilities now, especially in the new year, so that the label can still function if I'm going to be like full-time touring, you know. So yeah, like I said, I didn't imagine that this would be happening. Like this happened like out of the blue, really, like the whole tour offers for Death Angel and Exodus and Hatebreed, you know, like I had no expectation of any of that happening. So yeah, you know, as far as the label side is looking right now, like, yeah, things are definitely different from what, like how the year started out last year, you know, like through the pandemic, 2020 and 21, obviously there was no shows and no tours happening. So my full like time was going into the label, but now, you know, I have to adjust accordingly as well. It'll still be around, but it'll, you know, we'll see how it pans out and what shape it takes, you know, through this year, you know. And in terms of booking shows locally, I've kind of had to stop that too, because, you know, like booking a local event of any size, whether it's a small show or a big show, it has to be done at least a couple of months in advance, you know, or more. But it's like, I don't want to be in a situation where I'm booking shows, but I'm not going to be in town, you know? So I had to step back from that too. But again, like that's again, something that I could pick up again, like if I happen to like have a big break from touring or something of that sort, or again, hand it over to my assistant to handle that as well, you know, under my company name. So I think I'm going to be more like, I don't know, like hands off, but everything will still be hopefully, you know, around as far as Metal Assault is concerned, you know.
Would these bigger bands be in kind of a good position too, if they need, you know, someone to open up for them in, on the fly, or if they?
Yeah, that's definitely the hope too for me.
I'm just turn to you, you know, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm constantly like making those connections with these bands and their, and even like the companies that manage these bands, like they're like big management companies that have a roster of their own, you know, just for management. So, you know, who knows what connections you could make, like not just for myself, but also like, yeah, for the label stuff, you know? So it's always like, it's always good to have that option, you know, for sure.
Yeah. It seems like, it could be a really good opportunity in the big picture for the label as well. And the artists there, because as Ian said, maybe there'll be these contacts when they need someone in an area that you're based out of, or that you have contacts in, or part of the label. I wanted to kind of go back to some of the logistics about the touring, some of these big tours. It seems like you have to be very structured and it's like almost corporate in a way, right? You're loading in at 10, you have this whole thing. I presume there's press they have to do and all these different things that they have to do, but it probably doesn't all go smoothly, perfectly as planned, right? I mean, there's got to be crises that arise. Is there anything that comes to mind about any of the tours that you worked this past year that were kind of exciting for like a
better term? I mean it actually, everything was mostly pretty smooth, more than I had expected, actually, you know, because, well, I hadn't done touring of this level. But the one incident that comes to mind was it was in Salt Lake City. And this was on the first leg of the Bass Strikes Back tour. The previous show was in Denver, and I think it was a case of like snow hitting us like late at night, like when we were getting out of the Denver show. But for Exodus, we had our driver, like he already like kind of planned it out, and we escaped the snow. We got out of there before the snow hit, but the other two bands got stuck. So we were the only ones who got to the venue on time, like in Salt Lake City. And so my merch is already set up, and like the other two bands were like not even there, you know, which never happened usually, because the headliner always gets set up first. So Testament would set up first, and they would already be set up by the time I even got into the building, you know. But that was an exception for sure. But in the end, it all worked out. Like everybody was able to kind of be flexible and adjust on the fly, and the show was successful. I mean, because at this level, like it's like you've already sold so many tickets that you don't want to cancel, you know, a show, like as much as
possible.
Were they making you guys
pay for the spot in there, like to set up the shirts and stuff? I heard they're doing that now. It's kind of shitty.
Well, that's another thing you bring up, which is actually being talked about like a lot now, which I'm glad that the conversation is happening, because especially on my Twitter feed, I see people talking about it all the time. Even like the drummer from Steel Panther was talking about it like recently. You know? So here's the thing that happens, right? And I'm going to be open about this. I don't care, you know, if they're listening, so to speak. But look, so every venue takes a percentage of your merch sales. And that becomes like a sizable amount if you're like selling merch worth like thousands of dollars, like at an Exodus show, you know, because then your payout, you have to pay out 15%, which is kind of, it's a pain, you know? So
that's a big part of their profit, man.
Yeah. And it makes no sense. I'm going to say this. It makes no sense to me. Like I'm the merch seller. So I obviously hate it, like personally, but also in terms of like the like the business dealing of the show, of any given show. I mean, I don't know how it makes sense that the venue can just take your a percentage of your gross sales, because that involves so much. Like, they're paying for the merchandise to get printed, so that's cost for the band. And then there's cost for like merch, you know, like supplies,
power
supplies, display supplies. Yeah, for the merch person. And so much, there's so much cost that the band is already paying, which comes out of the gross sales. So how can the venue be entitled to like the gross percentage, you know, because
exactly.
Then in reality, they're taking a much bigger percentage, because if you look at the net sales, that 15% probably becomes more like 30 or 35 or 40%, you know, like, or probably even more. So
they're making money off the band already. And then it just seems like greedy bullshit to me, you know,
and the booze and everything else.
Right.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like a lot of people, especially in on the socials, have like whenever somebody posts about it, they're like, well, how come the band doesn't get a percentage of the liquor, food and bar sales? Because, you know, it's like people, the band is bringing people to the venue. The venue,
that's fucking right,
is at least for the most part, it's like people are not coming there just to come to the venue. Like, they would not be there if there was not a band playing that they wanted to see. So yeah, I think that's how it would even out. Or just cancel both of it and just let everybody keep their own money. You know? Simple as that.
Yeah, that seems the simplest thing. It seems the most fair.
So hopefully somebody, maybe Taylor Swift needs to speak up on this, because whenever she speaks up on something, things change, you know. Like, I've noticed this, like, you know, on like the biggest scale possible. So, like, you know, she went up against like Apple and like Ticketmaster and stuff like that. So maybe she should go up against like venues, you know, and we can get this, you know, end this once and for all, you know.
What do you learn, Andrew, from something like this, from going on this tour? Obviously, you know, to tour with thrash metal legends and just, I'm sure you meet all kinds of great and interesting people, but what do you learn about that could help you with, like, whether it's you're promoting live shows or doing a record label? What do you learn from that? What's something you learned?
Well, it's been like an eye opener for me, man. I mean, I'm glad you asked, because like, there are some pretty big takeaways that I got from doing these tours. I think, and it kind of does apply to what you were saying in terms of like how I could benefit like my clients, or in the grand scheme of things, how that knowledge would help me and anybody who I'm working for, you know, and maybe the listeners can benefit from this too, if they're in bands or whatever. The biggest takeaway for me is that opening for a bigger band is way more profitable than doing your own show, you know, like easily, like, which I did not know this to the extent that I do now, because even a band like Exodus, they've been around since 1979. They still prefer to open. So they opened for Testament last year. This year, they're starting out opening for Anthrax and BLS. They're actually the opening act on this tour, not a third out of three. So they'll be playing first. They'll be playing at 6:30 p.m. every day, you know. But that's going to do so well for them, because there's still going to be way more people in the building than there would be at an Exodus show headlining, you know. And they know this, that they don't take offense to that at all. You know, they know that this is the business. So that's the first takeaway that every band should think about. You know, it's like, yeah, open for a bigger band, try to land a bigger tour, whatever it takes. You know, that's going to change your band's career completely. So that's the biggest one. And then the other really big takeaway for me, as far as merch is concerned and just sales, is that music sales are dead, man. Like, in terms of like physical music sales, like, we might think on a more underground scale that people buy vinyl, CDs, cassettes, or whatever it may be. And I used to think that too. But after doing tours on the big, larger scale, you know, because obviously, like, my survey on this is based on like so many more people that came to those shows, as opposed to like the underground shows, you know? So this is what I've noticed, is that like a lot of these bigger bands, they don't even bring music. Like they hardly bring any music to sell at the merch booth. They sell other stuff. Like it's all t-shirts and any clothing items or anything except for music. Like
people, it's all streaming,
that's what it's selling. Yeah. And it's like, it seems like at least the bigger artists have adapted to how things are now with like streaming platforms.
Like they can demand more money too, though.
Yeah, exactly. You know, because they know that they're not making money from music, so they can sell the merch at a higher price. They can ask more money from the venues as far as their performance fee is concerned. Yeah, you know. So
it's a weird catch 22 because the music is more accessible now to everybody. So yeah. Everyone hears all these smaller bands. More people hear the smaller bands,
yeah.
But they don't benefit financially at all.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of weird. I don't.
Yeah. So I think what the bands have done to adapt to this scenario these days is that, okay, they use streaming platforms to their benefit by releasing singles and videos and stuff like that, like, you know, as much as possible. And of course, also whenever they release albums, like it's everywhere, you know, it's on all streaming platforms. So they have already expected to not make any money from music sales. But they're just using these platforms now to reach as many people as possible, because nobody needs to really pay anything to listen to the music anymore, or they pay whatever they're subscribed to, like Spotify, YouTube Music, or Apple Music, or any of those, right? So it's just about using the platform to reach people, which you can do because that's what they are for, you know, like if you use it well. And then you make sure that they're aware when you announce a show in their city, you know, like the listeners. So that's the game now, you know.
It's so ironic because it's almost like music, the music of it is the loss leader. Just like you go to Costco and you get the $5 rotisserie chicken or the dollar hot dog or whatever it is. Yeah. Right? It's like your loss leader. And that's kind of I'm being kind of facetious, and it's a weird way of thinking of it, because ultimately it is about the music, you know. I thoroughly love going to live music. You know, it's cool to wear a shirt and stuff, but
yeah,
I get the shirts to remember and to support what it is that I really love, is going out for a night of loud music.
Yeah.
And it's weird when those dynamics that you're talking about with regards to the business sort of render the music as a loss leader. It's weird.
Yeah, I think recorded music is a loss leader, and live music is the exact opposite of that, I guess, you know, like, because the live music is still, I guess that is the product that people are paying to see, you know, but that leads to profit from other sources, you know, like the merchandise mainly. So that's how it is, I guess, you know, but like I said, I mean, it's been a huge eye opener. Like I had not been able to survey this type of stuff on such a large scale ever before, because there's nothing like firsthand experience. Like I literally get to meet everybody that comes into the show. I don't think anybody else can say that, you know, except for the merch guy, you know. So I'm kind of using that as field research, really, which it's been a lot of field research over all these tours that I did, you know.
That's smart.
So you've got a tour coming up. You're leaving here later this week. What else is on the radar for you this year?
Yeah, there's a couple of new releases that will be out within the first quarter of the year, or the first by April, I would think. And exact dates will be announced like soonish, I think. So I don't want to say anything that ends up being wrong. But yeah, like there'll be announcements made about that. And we'll of course, you know, we'll send you guys, or you see it yourself, I'm sure, you know, and we can send you guys the promos or whatever to get early access. I don't know if anybody even does that anymore or not, like the whole advance album promos, but we still do them, you know, because why not? Got to get it out there and at least try like to get it to the media and spread the word. So yeah, there'll be some label activity. I unfortunately couldn't book the anniversary show this year, which was like the big, I worked so hard on the anniversary last year, and I think it was overall like it I was happy with how it went. But you know, couldn't do it this year because I'm not even going to be here in February. Like, this is kind of what I was referring to when I said, like, I couldn't like really book shows anymore, like locally, because I mean, if I'd booked this February thing, like let's say 6 months ago, And then found out that, oh, I'm going on tour January, February. Now what? So, like, just to avoid that situation, I had to
That's
just, like...
That's why you have your assistant take care of all that.
Yeah. So now, from now on, hopefully, like, I can establish, like, a new system of, you know, getting that stuff back, back and active in terms of metal assault events and stuff like that, you know. But, yeah, couldn't even do the anniversary show this year. Yeah.
Congratulations, Vice President, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Start booking the shows. Yeah. I'm out of here. Bye.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a call with her tomorrow. So, yeah, I'm going to talk about a lot of this stuff, I think. So, but, yeah, like, aside from that, I mean, in terms of touring as a merchant, as a merch guy, there's a couple of other tours that are being talked about that I can't say yet because, again, it's not official yet. And those tours are not even announced yet, I don't think. So, but, yeah, I if I can tour another 6 months out of this year, I think that'll be ideal for me because after a tour, I do like time at home for a month or 2 months. It's pretty sweet, you know, just chill and get back to some label stuff and also just, you know, personal life, things like that. So,
yeah, you do you know. This. You're gone from your actual home for a while, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, actually, that's true. Yeah. I mean, actually, pre-COVID, I did a lot of touring, like from 2014 to 2019. But a lot of those early years, like those were a struggle for me, like financially. So I didn't even have a place here to call home, like in those years. I would just kind of temporarily move around. At least now I have a place to call home. So it's nice to come back to after a tour, you know. I just got a new PlayStation. So I've just been using that like while I've been home. So, yeah.
Maybe you can just get rid of your apartment or wherever you live and then save some money and just live on a bus for the rest of your life.
Yeah, who knows, man? Like, I'll be down. Like, for me, the tour life is the best life. Like, it's not for everybody, and I don't think everybody would really say that. But after the amount of touring I've done, like, being on tour versus not being on tour, I would rather be on tour, you know?
Well, you know, I really appreciate it when people do that, you know? It's... Ian and I went to a show. When did we go to that enforced show, Ian? Was that December?
First. Yeah.
Huh?
December 1st.
Yeah, December 1st. And we, you know, we went and we hung out with Knox, the vocalist from Enforced, and had him on and talked to him a little bit. But just being able to do that and like be part of that and support the people in whatever way you can that do it. I mean, I kind of joked about it, but it's like, for me, I have my own thing going on. Ian has his own thing going on. I can't devote my time to being on a bus and doing the music every night for people. So when I have the opportunity in whatever little way that is to facilitate or support or just, you know, and yeah, support it, right? Support that. It's so awesome, you know, and I appreciate being able to go out and have a night of doing my thing. And then instead of being stuck on a bus, I get to go home. So it's not lost on me for sure what it takes to make that happen, you know, and I totally appreciate it because it's like that's what feeds me, you know what I mean? It's like
it's hard. They're dedicated, man.
Yeah.
Because like you were saying, Andrew, it's a lot of their own money that they're putting into doing this because they love to do it. That's it. They're not making a shitload of money or any money, really.
Yeah, and those guys, like they're like Exodus guys. I mean, some of them are in there. At least one or two are in their early 60s by now too, you know? So it's like, that's right. Real dedication to still do it. And I don't think there's any end in sight for them. It's like, they're going to keep doing it, man, as long as they're physically able to, you know? So yeah, it definitely takes a lot of dedication, but going back to what you were saying there, Dan, yeah. I mean, I appreciate the support that you're providing to the bands and to people like me, you know, through your podcast and like, For a number of years, like Metal Assault was purely just a blog and a podcast, but I just, you know, I couldn't keep it up. So I kudos to you guys to be able to keep it up, man. It's like, it's inspiring. And also like, I'm jealous, you know, that you're able to do a podcast. Like I've tried so many times and even like on these last couple of tours, I even took a Zoom mic and everything, and I never even got to use it because there was no time, man. Even though I was on a bus with these legends, like maybe this next tour, I should be better at that. Like that should be my aim in terms of what I can improve on is that aspect, you know, Because I think people would love that. Like if I were able to interview Gary and all these other guys, just, while sitting on a bus with them, working for
Oh,
them, Like,
people would eat it up. I would eat it up.
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I did one with Death Angel, Ted Aguilar. I don't think I even posted about it. Like maybe I should still do that. I think people will still check it out. Like it was posted like 2 months ago, I think, or more.
Oh yeah, I saw
But
when you did that feed, that new thing. So it's on that feed. I'll check it out then. I didn't see that you
yeah, I mean
were.
it's published, but I didn't get to post about it. I don't think many people would even know that it's there. So it's still fresh, I guess, it's still relevant, It was a Ted is super nice, Ted from Death Angel. He's a good guy to talk to. Yeah, actually, like there wasn't really no press on the first leg or even on the second leg of that of the Bass Strikes Back. I'm not sure why. Maybe because of the COVID protocols and stuff like that.
There's no what?
There was no press. Like the bands didn't really do any interviews, like
Oh.
that I'm aware of, which was a surprise to me because back in the days, I used to be the guy who would be on the tour bus doing interviewing those bands. Like I interviewed Exodus and Testament and Death Angel so many times for Metal Assault, like back in the days. So I was surprised that that was not really happening. Maybe that'll be different this year. Finally, that I think people have moved far enough past COVID and stuff. We'll see. I don't know.
Maybe it's
I'd be
just us now or something.
yeah, we're the last men standing in.
yeah,
I know.
maybe that too. Like maybe it's just a lack of good interviewers who are really doing it, Like I was like very dedicated to that, and that has led me to this now, If I didn't do that, I don't think I'd be doing this now.
Right. Well, again, I'm very jealous.
Well, dude, I really appreciate you coming on here, man. I know that you are getting ready to leave town for an extended period of time. So thanks for getting with us and talking with us, man. I wish you nothing but the best. I wish Metal Assault, whatever that shakes out to be, whether it's just helping bands get their music out, whatever it is, best of luck.
Yeah, hey, thanks again, guys. I mean, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for indulging me because I could talk about this stuff like all day, every day. It's like it doesn't end. So this is all I can talk about. So
God, I
it's a
can't believe it's
pleasure
been a
anytime.
year. It just kills me. It's already been a year. It's
Yeah, a year has gone by. So maybe
yeah.
I'll see you guys here next year,
I certainly hope so.
hopefully earlier, but yeah,
Yeah, well,
definitely
hopefully
in
we'll
a
catch you at a
year.
show. A lot of tourists come through San Diego. I'm willing to travel a little bit as well.
Yeah.
But it'd be great to catch up again. That was awesome when we were able to do so at the House of Blues. And
Yeah, thanks for buying me my pre-show dinner that day. So another token of support from you for two people like us, so appreciate it.
yeah, he buys all my shit too.
Nice.
Got him. Right, man. Well, hey, thanks again for coming out and talking with us. I really appreciate it. Once again, we were talking with Andrew from Metal Assault. Come back. Repeat offender. You're now part of the Repeat Offender group.
Yeah,
Nice.
definitely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be right back.